I've got a lot to talk about today, but I got to start with this story about Jesus. All right. Now, I love Jesus. I studied Jesus in college. That was my major, basically. And there's a Jesus statue down there in New Mexico on the border between Mexico and New Mexico. It's 29 feet tall. It's a big Jesus. It's made of limestone, and it's basically standing in the way of where Trump wants to build his wall. And Trump and his company are trying to acquire the land through eminent domain. They want to take 14 acres of this land. I believe it's owned by, the Diocese of Las Cruces, maybe? Anyway, they want to take this 14 acres to build a 1.5 mile long stretch of border wall. And the diocese is challenging that in court, saying, you know, you cannot use eminent domain to take this because it would totally ruin what we have here. And what do they got? Well, they got a big statue of Jesus, but it's become a landmark, kind of a center for pilgrimage, and for about like 100 years now. So people are coming to visit this thing. They hike up the mountain. Literally thousands of people every year, tens of thousands even. They come up on Good Friday, on other days. And they've been doing this for a long time. And they argue that the lawsuit argues that, you know, this threatens our pilgrimage site and it contradicts Catholic values. And I love that. I love that they're putting that in there because, you know, thanks to Pope Leo and his predecessor, Pope Francis, it is pretty clear that what Trump is doing on immigration is contrary to Catholic values. Anyway, go Jesus statue, stand strong. I want to talk also about the First Amendment. And whether it's time just to kiss it goodbye, and I say that with great fear and intrepidation. Big corporations, of course, and their big allies in government have been getting more aggressive about using eminent domain, not just to steal land away from Jesus statues, but to steal land for all kinds of purposes. I mean, we have fought that here in Iowa against pipelines. It's being fought all over the country. But right now, the First Amendment attacks are coming from all directions, or coming from one direction, but for all reasons. There was a group of Texas protesters associated with the very loosely defined group called Antifa. Remember, Antifa, it's not an organization. It stands for anti-fascist. It's just kind of a loose-knit collective. There are different people with different perspectives on how you organize and express yourself in Antifa. And some of the protest activity in this particular action at a detention center in Texas, I think it involves pretty poor judgment. So the demonstrators showed up at this detention facility late at night. Their plan was to set off fireworks, allegedly to let the detainees in the center know that they were there, that they were there in solidarity. I don't quite see how that works. Some protesters vandalized cars. They vandalized a guard shack. They also broke a security camera. And when a police officer arrived, he drew his gun and was subsequently shot in the shoulder by one of the protesters. The officer was wounded, not killed. He survived. Now, again, there's pretty much nothing in that protest that I support. The guy who shot the officer obviously deserves punishment. But, you know, life in prison. I mean, the guy's getting 100 years in prison, life plus in prison. For what? At worst, what? Attempted murder? You know, I get that that was wrong and there needs to be a legal response to that. But the other protesters, I'm going to quote from a Guardian story about this. The punishment for the protesters exceeds the lengthiest prison sentences given out for the attack on the U.S. Capitol on January 6th. Enrique Tarrio, the leader of the Proud Boys, who was convicted of seditious conspiracy, was sentenced to 22 years in prison. And Stuart Rhodes, the leader of the far-right group, the Oath Keepers, was sentenced to 18 years in prison. End quote. And of course, not end of story, because what happened? Trump pardoned them and everyone else involved with January 6th. Anybody else see a double standard there? So, you know, this is regarded as kind of a test case for the Trump administration on how far it can go in, you know, trampling the First Amendment to squelching the, you know, freedom of speech. And, it's the first case, but it's not, it's so far, it's there are others, all right? There were 15 activists in Minneapolis who allegedly interfered with ICE. And there's also the situation in Washington State where a federal jury found three protesters guilty of conspiracy for participating in a protest last year at an ICE facility in Washington. So you see where this is leading, right? I mean, again, it's the fact that groups are being targeted just by virtue of their identity, actions that are, you know, in most cases, not you know, historically, we wouldn't even be prosecuting them. You know, and yet they're being turned into very offensive crimes, enabling terrorism, you know? I mean, where's this going to go? Okay, I think about here in Des Moines. We've had several protests on a bridge over the interstate running through Des Moines where a small group of people acting entirely peacefully, nothing aggressive or law-breaking or property-damaging about anything they're doing, merely holding signs expressing support for Palestine. And why will that not be called enabling terrorism by this administration, the way they're heading? Or for that matter, why not me? Why not somebody who has a talk show, who calls out injustices as he sees them or she sees them, and because they don't align with the administration's priorities and perspective, get labeled enabling terrorism? All right, so with that in mind, I'd like to talk about Israel. I put up a Facebook post last week, and gee, it sure got a lot of traction. I'll read it to you. More Jewish leaders are speaking out against genocide. This from today's The Guardian. Dozens of Israelis from the security, political, and cultural elite in Israel have threatened legal action against their government over support for Jewish terrorism and an ideology of ethnic cleansing in the occupied West Bank. Again, ideology of ethnic cleansing, those are words used by these Jewish leaders in government, you know, in security, in the cultural venues of Israel. I thought it was a pretty tame statement myself. And again, most of the comments I got were favorable about it, in agreement. But there were some that just, wow. here's one in all caps. There is no genocide, 3 exclamation points. The population of Gaza has soared. Do you know that 2 million, 25% of Israel's 8 million population is Muslim? They have full voting and civil rights. End of comment. Let's analyze that a little bit, all right? The truth is most Palestinians in East Jerusalem hold, quote, permanent residency rather than citizenship, meaning they can vote in municipal elections, but not for national elections. That's a big difference. That's a big difference. Also, I mean, Israeli law allows majority Jewish towns, even small ones, to reject applicants who want to live in those towns based on, quote, social suitability. So that limits where Palestinians can buy or build homes. And one more. In 2018, there was legislation introduced in the Knesset calling for Israel to become a state based on full equality for all citizens. Okay, seems fair, seems reasonable. The legislation was banned and never even debated, never even come up for a conversation. Okay, back to some of the comments that really troubled me from my Facebook post. Quote, the colonization of Israel by Romans, Christians, Muslims is over. We are back and we are staying. Got nukes, baby. You know, that's so disturbing. And it's so disturbing because it comes from a person that I considered a friend. Maybe still consider a friend. I mean, we have a lot of things we agree on. I thought this person would also agree that nuclear weapons could be a problem. Again, it's from a very liberal, quote, liberal Democrat and a former elected official. There are a lot of good comments. I want to share one of them with you. I see anti-Semitism everywhere. That literally in no way negates the genocide that is occurring. The entire world is covering it. You have to stand on your head and hold one eye in your hand not to see genocide. I agree that Hamas is not a good organization. I've never supported them. but they certainly lack the U.S. military's might. The Palestinian lands have been shrinking for decades. You have to very carefully handpick your info source not to see that. All right, so I love that comment. I think it's, and there were some people posted on my page who were like F you if they, to the people who disagreed with me. I don't go in for that. Here's one that really disappointed. This is from somebody I considered a friend. I'm going to end our friendship on Facebook. Your post about Jewish terrorism directly endangers me and my family. I expect more from my friends, end quote. And I have no idea how a post I made sharing a news story endangers this person's family. I no idea. I think that's just a way to negate the value of what I had to say. Or in this case, really, what The Guardian had to say. I was just quoting The Guardian. Another comment here, only talking about genocide in Gaza, I think that means as opposed to genocide elsewhere, makes you anti-Semitic. Typically, there's not population growth during a genocide, and I'm not asking you to advocate for Palestinians. I'm asking you not to be an anti-Semitic F-word while you do it. I mean, I just don't know what to do with that. I have no idea what to do with that. So I'll leave you with this, again, from The Guardian. And there's other publications, plenty of publications that are making a lot of sense on this, including the United Nations and their what they write. Again, the story in The Guardian concludes with, Israel continues to commit genocide but deliberately targeting Palestinian children in Gaza, according to an independent UN inquiry. Again, I think you'd have to just want to turn a blind eye to what's going on to come up with any kind of opinion that supports what the current Israeli government is doing. And maybe you could argue what Israeli governments have been doing since 1948. All right, so I want to talk a little bit about the SCOTUS ruling, the Supreme Court ruling on Bayer. So that was I don't know if people have paid attention, because a lot of the stories about this have not covered how the vote actually broke out. It was 7-2. So it wasn't the usual 6-3 Trump conservative appointees versus liberal justices, so-called. The two opposing votes were Ketanji Brown Jackson and Neil Gorsuch. Interesting. So, this is not just a Trump appointee problem. If you have trouble with the ruling, and I do, it's not just a Trump appointee problem. Again, the bottom line is this is about Roundup, produced by Monsanto, who is now owned by the German company Bayer. Roundup does not include any warning of potentially carcinogenic material. And Monsanto and Bayer deny there's any connection, any link at all. Yet plaintiffs have won about 10 Roundup trial verdicts. And some of those have been multi-million and multi-billion dollar settlements. But there have been over 200,000 claims filed, and many of them still pending. So I see why Bayer has come forward and tried to change laws about this and trying to get the Supreme Court to rule in his favor. And the CEO of Bayer, Bill Anderson, he praised the ruling for providing regulatory certainty to farmers and the herbicide producer. Read, in my opinion, the herbicide producer, not so much to farmers. But he says, quote, this decision is good for American farmers who help feed the world. It provides the regulatory clarity necessary for innovators like us to develop the agricultural tools that guarantee an affordable food supply. All right, end quote. Food supply? I mean, I support Iowa farmers, but we're not growing food. We're growing soybeans. And corn. Yeah, we're growing hogs as well and cattle. A lot of the hogs are being shipped overseas. But to say this is a ruling, this ruling is farmer friendly. Well, farmers are a lot of the people who are suing because they're the ones who have been most directly affected by this chemical. But again, this decision is it's reversing thousands of jury awards to people who said they were harmed by Roundup, and again, many of them farmers. Now, to be clear, there is mixed opinion about whether Roundup is carcinogenic. The International Agency for Research on Cancer classified glyphosate as, quote, probably carcinogenic to humans. And it cites links to non-Hodgkin lymphoma, certain types of blood cancers, So the EPA, on the other hand, the U.S. EPA, says it's safe, it's okay, you know. But I don't trust the EPA. I don't trust Congress. I don't trust the president, and I'm not saying just this president. I haven't trusted our presidents for a long time. This one is the worst, hands down, in my opinion. But you know, to say that. If you want to weigh the EPA decision or recommendation on this versus a international agency for research on cancer, I'm going to go with the latter. Because the latter hasn't been lobbied to death like U.S. Congress. Again, just to put it in perspective, since 2024, in less than 2 years, Bayer, has spent nearly $20 million on federal lobbying efforts. So I don't see how this I don't see how you can look at what's going on and say, hey, this is a ruling in favor of people and even in favor of farmers. And to drive that point home, what's happening here in Iowa is interesting and relevant to anybody who's concerned about this issue, because we have a gubernatorial race underway. Rob Sand, the Democrat running, Zach Lane on the Republican side, and both are criticizing this ruling. Zach Lane says this is not a win for farmers in any way. Lane said the decision strips people harmed by pesticides of legal recourse and undermines civil liability as a key part of the free market. And Rob Sand says, again, he's the Democratic nominee, he criticized the ruling, saying he would push federal officials to prioritize Iowans' health over big corporations, powerful insiders, or party bosses. He says about the decision, it is wrong, gross, and will continue to make life worse for Iowans. So I think it's fascinating. They're both leading candidates for the highest office in the state of Iowa. You know, a state where farmers, again, use a lot of this glyphosate. But, you know, they're seeing what the problem is, and they're both coming out against it. Fascinating. Anyway, we'll see where that goes. Again, the ruling hurts a lot of people. And again, it's not just the Trump Supreme Court appointees that are the ones who ruled against people who are dealing with the impacts and effects of glyphosate.